Hi everyone. We want to welcome you to the fourth episode of Parenting from the Inside with Anna and Joel. How are you, Anna?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Got a daughter starting nursery this week, which is interesting and up and down. We're getting there.
Because you just got back to Italy.
Just got back to Italy after some time in the UK. So
yeah,
it's kind of hot and sweaty here.
Oh, I'm jealous. It's getting cold here.
Well, the one good thing is you are in Denmark, and this episode is all about new Danish parenting.
Yeah.
And we have a real-life Danish parenting expert here with us.
Yeah. So my name is Anna Vincent, and I'm a Danish family therapist and IFS-trained, and I'm a mother of two children that are 12 and 9 now. They're getting very big.
I am an IFS-trained coach. I work with men and couples. And lots of wonderful dads. And I'm British and I have a little girl. So there's things we have to say, aren't there?
Yeah. So as always, only take what you can use. We're not experts on your life. We know a bunch of stuff about therapy and parenting and attachment and all these things we talk about. But you're the expert in your life. So if we say something that doesn't feel right, that doesn't make sense, you just toss that out again. And it's not important.
We are not representatives of the IFS Institute.
Yeah.
We are not hired or working on their behalf.
Or anybody else.
Or anyone else.
Yeah, we're just here to share with you guys and hope that it's going to be helpful. Today, we're going to talk about the second principle of new Danish parenting. Last time, we talked about the first principle, which was about children always make sense. Mm. And that was about children being born social and competent, children being needing to be translated, and about meeting our children where they are, not where we want them to go. So that was focused mainly on integrity and cooperation and on parenting through existence instead of on morality. You can listen to that in the last episode if you didn't hear it yet. And today it's about relationships, and it's called Relationships Matter Most. The foundation we come from is, one thing is IFS, which is internal family systems. It's a form of therapy, for those who don't know it, that focuses on the inner system of parts, the inner family we have, and how we take on burdens and survival strategies and in the therapy and coaching. With IFS, we work with that a lot. And it's also a way of viewing people as always making sense, as always being, our parts always have a good intention, even when they're not always helpful. And then another pillar that we're basing our podcast on is attachment theory. It's about the attachment relationship to our parents, to our caregivers. If that's a safe attachment, we get an inner safe attachment. And then it's focused on the new child view from Denmark. And that's the new Danish parenting, which is about equality, personal leadership, really making sense of our children. So it's a new paradigm of parenting that we're bringing to you guys. IFS is a big part of that, in my view.
Yeah, it feels like for me, because obviously I'm much newer to the new Danish parenting model, but for me, it feels like this real blueprint for parents. Very intuitive, very progressive, and really like the more I've learned about it, especially through you, the more it sort of settles me as a parent because things start to make more sense. So I really just encourage anyone who's looking for kind of more clarity, but also more of a sense of how do you navigate this crazy world of parenting to find out more. And hopefully this episode will help with that.
So in this episode, Relationships Matter Most, we're going to talk about three main points. And one is that we're all equal in worth, but we're not equal in power and experience. That's the first one. The second one is setting boundaries around ourselves, not around our children. We talked a bit about boundaries last time, but here we're going to go more into that. And then the third point is children don't stop loving us. They stop loving themselves. And that's a lot about shame and love in the attachment relationship. When we talk about relationships, the attachment relationship to our parents is the most important one. And this will be some degree of secure and some degree of insecure. Relationships and attachment is about co-regulation. And this is what leads to self-regulation on the inside. And it's about love. So feeling lovable the way I am, just being me, this is only possible when the eyes of those I love, when my parents, when they are looking back at me with love. When that doesn't happen or doesn't happen enough, then I shut down. And natural shame will create a distance, both on the inside and on the outside. And we're going to talk more about shame later. But shame is what protects us in the absence of love. When there's not love or not felt love, shame's going to come into a protector system. So when experts are talking about you probably heard this, that the environment and gene expression happens through the environment. A big part of this is about attachment, about relationships. And in my view, that's the most important part of it.
Just something on that, that, you know, we talk about self-esteem is only possible when the eyes of those I love are looking at me with love. I can imagine most parents go like, yes, tick. Of course, I'm looking at my child with love, but I'm thinking of some of the guys I know. A lot of them would say, everything I do is for my children. Everything I do is for my family. It's all about love. So of course I do that. But the point we're making here is like, what is present when you're with your child? What actually shows up with your child? Is it discernible as love to your child? There may be some, you know, some deep sense of that's what's motivating you, but actually, is it discernible to your child in the moment? And I think that's what may not be the reality for many of us.
Yeah, because often our children don't feel it. When they walk in the door and we might feel, oh, I love my child, but we're saying, hey, take off your shoes, hang up your jacket.
Yeah, let me just send this email.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That doesn't feel like love, right?
No.
Yeah, and that's just a small part of things that happen all the time, every day, right? Sometimes I look at my children with love and I really want to help them, but I want to help my daughter not feel lonely when she's alone in her room, because I was lonely when I was alone in my room, but she's actually not, right? So that I'm not even seeing her there if I'm seeing my own past.
Mm, beautiful. We're going to get to more of this.
Yeah. There's so many things that affect us that we don't even realize, right? Yeah. So it's just about becoming aware of that. And it's never about blaming ourselves or even our own parents. It's about realizing what's there and taking responsibility for what's ours.
Yes.
The relationships that we grow up in is like the air we breathe, and it shapes us into becoming ourselves more, or it shapes us into shutting off and building personality traits that are based on survival mechanisms. So who I can be with my parents shapes who I can be with myself, and what I shut off inside of myself, what parts get exiled, and what I think, what I feel, what I believe about myself, and what I believe about the world. Is the world a safe place, or is it an unsafe place where I have to protect myself and shut off to myself? For instance, I learned that if I express strong emotions, if I show vulnerability, I'm not going to be mad. I'm going to be probably ridiculed. I'm probably going to be made fun of. So I developed a personality trait of being a very private person, not sharing how I feel and dealing with emotional stuff by myself and often by repressing it. And that helped me a lot when I was a kid. And now it's not helping me so much. And it's taking me a really long time. And it's still something I work on to actually feel myself and know myself and to be able to express how I feel in relationships. So this has a big influence on my life. And it's also not set in stone. It's something I'm working on. Many of us have a lot of anxiety that we don't even realize is there. But then when we start opening up, getting to know ourselves better, that often comes up, because that can be really scary, because we learned, like our bodies learned that it's not safe. Our parts learned that it's not safe. So it takes a lot of safe interactions and really becoming aware, really working with your parts changes the neural highways in your brain, the pathways in your brain.
I think there's something here about that. These things aren't black and white. So what you're saying is really profound. The relationships we grow up in shape who we are when we're older. And it's like some of the stuff you're sharing, these could be real strengths, right? So some of the qualities of being a private person may have been hugely valuable to you as an adult. Mm-hmm. But the point is, on their own, they're limiting. And actually you're wanting to get to a place where you can choose when to lean on those strengths and others. Like kind of example for me, I guess one example is of being sort of acutely, like sort of socially aware of what's going on around me. So this trait of being like a really good listener, reading subtlety, reading like emotional energy in the room, being able to read between the lines. But what comes with that is this need to sort of control or manage events, control people's perceptions of me in order to feel secure. Because I learned like if someone was unhappy or things weren't quite right in the dynamic around me, then that was unsafe. So this need to kind of control. And some of those traits have been really valuable to me, you know, being able to listen and read the room. But it also makes it really hard to let go, hard to trust people around me, and also to let others lead. That's my journey, but it stems from those early relationships that I grew up in. And it's painful to actually acknowledge that sometimes to acknowledge that that's what's going on in the relationship with our children.
Yeah. And you also make an important point that it's not black and white. and our journey back to ourselves. It's not like a straight line. It's not getting from one point to the other because it's not something outside of ourselves. We're not getting rid of stuff. We're doing circles closer and closer to ourselves and using the strength, all the good things that we also got.
Yeah, it's like tapping into new neural pathways, as you call it, not like putting a no-go sign over them. Everyone's already got.
Yeah, all our parts are trying to be helpful, and they can actually become helpful when we help release the burdens and the pain from the past.
Yeah.
So as parents, we have a really big responsibility in being the secure attachment relationship, secure attachment figures, so that our children can grow up and become more themselves instead of shutting off to themselves. And we're never going to be perfect at that. It's not black and white, like you're saying. But from the old paradigm of parenting, most of us have learned that we have to shape our children and mold them from the outside so that we can become good enough. But today we know that children already, we're not like born bad or born like white canvases or something like that, that people used to think. We already have everything we need to grow up healthy. What we need is a strong foundation. We need a loving relationship and to be seen and to be met. And it's a little bit like a flower or a little seed that you don't want to pull it. You don't want to try to shape it or cut off parts of it to make it grow. You want to put the right foundation, right? The soil around it. You want to give it sunlight and air and water it. And it's going to grow up and become itself. It already has everything it needs to do that. In the child-parent relationship, that's a huge power differentiation. So the parent naturally has more power. The parent is bigger and stronger and more experienced and is responsible for the child and for the child in the world and with the world. So this is not a bad thing. This is how we can be caretakers and this is how we can protect our children. But it's also a huge responsibility and one that very easily gets misused. And it often is in many ways that we don't even realize. Because the way we structure our society, where it's based on morality, this is what we talked about last time, is about what should be instead of about what is, about where we want to go, where we want our kids to go. And this seeps into our parenting through the old paradigm that our societies are such a big part of in many ways and from the old paradigm. So yeah. The parent will very easily become a bully instead of a caretaker. This is when being the leader becomes a negative thing. And it's a way that we end up passing on pain, often our own childhood pain, and set a foundation for insecure attachment in our children. And this is really important because it's often quite invisible. We don't even realize. We love our children. We want to help them feel good. We want to do good things for them. But because it becomes the air we breathe, is such a big part of our families, of society, we don't see it until we see it. So in the attachment relationship, there's a caregiver and a care receiver. And the caregiver is the adult that protects, and the care receiver is the child that's being cared for and protected. And the attachment relationship can be seen like the adult putting protective wings around the child. I have this image from Gordon Neufeld. He talks a lot about attachment too. And inside the wings, the child is safe. And slowly the child will start taking that feeling of safety and acceptance into the world. So I am safe. I'm good enough. Even if other people hurt me, it doesn't go in as deep because I have the protective wings around me. This is a secure attachment to our parents. But if the adult is closed off to their hearts, closed off to themselves in different ways, then the caregiver role, which is naturally caring for the care receiver, for the child, can easily become bullying instead, becoming abusive of power in some ways and take advantage of the power differentiation. When hurt happens inside those protective wings, inside that protective relationship or that attachment relationship, then nothing is safe. Then I'm not safe. And the attachment becomes insecure and going out into the world, being me, doesn't feel safe.
Yeah, and I think there's something in there about talking about children naturally becoming, they have everything inside them to become what they need to be. What was the metaphor you used?
Like a flower or a plant. Right?
Yeah, I like the acorn. You know, if the acorn gets light and water, it will become the tree. We don't have to make it do anything. What you're saying about the potential to sort of abuse our power, become the bully, if we're having to like keep chopping the plant or changing it, then that's really possible. But actually, if we don't have to shape our child, then maybe we can just be with the parts of them that maybe we find difficult or maybe we have reactions to or whatever, but we don't have to actually get in there and change it. And then we can allow actually those protective wings to be safe because we're not responsible for changing them. We can just hold them. I hope that can be a relief.
Yeah. And it can be really hard to believe that and hold on to it because we're told so much from the outside, from our families, from our ancestors, and also from society, from our doctors and all these people that are around us when we have children, right?
Yeah.
So if you're only able to assert your power because you're bigger than you're likely to be abusing your power. I'm bigger and I'm stronger than you, so I decide, is really different than I love you and I want to protect you, so I decide. If our children only listen to us because of the punishment that come if they don't listen to us, then we're probably parenting through fear and through abuse of power. And not because we're mean, but because abuse of power comes from our own insecurities, our own feeling of powerlessness, helplessness, from parts of us that have burdens and that react through abusing power, through using power when we don't have it. But if our children want to be good for us because they love us, because they're part of the family, but they can also say no when something threatens their integrity, then we're parenting through love.
Yeah. But yeah, I think this is a huge one. It's like sort of learning to check in with our system and saying, am I saying no because it really is the most loving or protective thing for my child? Or am I saying no because actually they can't fight back, so to speak, and it's just the easiest thing for me? And discerning the difference. And sometimes it's okay with what feels easiest. You know, we have got to check in with what we're actually resourced for. But being aware, is this coming from a place of love, or is it just because I've got the power and I'm going to get what I want?
Yeah. And is it hurting the child? Even if it's just because I need you to go to school, I need to go to work, all these different things that are part of our lives too.
Yes.
So I have an example of a parent picking up their child in kindergarten and the child is having fun and doesn't want to come home. Lots of us have tried that. So abuse of power will be, if you don't come now, I'm leaving without you. And this is a threat of separation. That's really scary for children. And we do that in many ways. And loving leadership could be like, I see that you're having fun. You can play for 5 more minutes and then we have to go. Or it could be like, oh, it looks like you're in the middle of a fun game, huh? I can see you're building castles. I like the way you put these rocks or whatever the child is doing. And maybe you can play more with it tomorrow. And right now I want you to come.
Beautiful. I like one of the ones that comes up for me is around sharing. You know how often we see you're in the park with your child and there's a toy and the child comes over to borrow it. And how many of us, as soon as another child comes over to kind of borrow it from our child and our child is hesitant to give their toy away, how many of us say, that's not nice. You need to be nice. You need to be generous. Give your toy away. Coming from that kind of place of morality that you were talking about. Rather than actually getting down and saying, you really want to play with this? It's a really nice toy, isn't it? Maybe we can let this boy play with it for 5 minutes and then have it back because we're going to be able to play with it all day at home, whatever it is. Or even saying actually no to this other child, that my child really wants to play with it. I'm really sorry. And maybe tomorrow when we meet you at the park.
Yeah. Yeah. Respecting the boundaries of the child, seeing the child, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Not imposing our own morality on them.
Yeah. So this is leading us to the first part of relationships matter most. And this is the one about equal in worth, but not in power and experience. So as human beings, we all have worth and value just being born, just being us. So worth is not something that we have to work at. It's not something we're doing. Just taking up space in the world is our birthright, right? Just being born. And of course, the way we have structured our society through capitalism and all these other things, inherent human worth easily gets confused with bringing value, like bringing cash, bringing financial growth, all these things where we're useful in society for what we do. And this becomes about doing and about doing the right way, the way society has told us, and which will look in different ways in different societies. So in this and in other ways, we learn that worth and value and love is something we earn as opposed to something that we just have or just are no matter what. We learn this through our families and as a product of the societies we grow up in. For this reason, most of us go out into the world trying to feel worthy by doing. So by taking the right educations, getting the right job, having the right house, the right family, looking the right way, everything looking perfect, even when it doesn't feel perfect. And this is how we build self-confidence. Building self-confidence is not a bad thing, but it's not who we are. It's something we build on the outside of ourselves. And it's never going to be able to fill that hole inside when the foundation of self-worth and self-feeling is missing. Self-worth is the foundation, feeling myself from the inside. And self-confidence is the scaffolding. So that's what we build on the outside. And if we build that on sand or on something that's not holding us, then that's going to fall down, right? It's not going to be able to hold us. We're all worthy as human beings, just being us. But most of us don't feel like that because we learn otherwise growing up. So part of that is the abuse of power that we talked about. when we as parents exert our power over our children in ways that are unkind, unloving, abusive even, and unequal or degrading in different ways, and can be in very small, subtle ways too, then we make our children feel small. We make them feel not important, feel bad, feel unworthy of respect and love. And this just becomes who they feel that they are. It's about existence. It's about shame. It's about worth, about not feeling worthy. So therefore, knowing that we have power, we also have experience, we have knowledge, we have power over our children, and it does not mean that we have more worth than them. It does not mean that we have the right to treat them as less than. And most of us know this, but we don't act like it. So we really need to start looking at ourselves and the responsibility we have for how our children feel in the relationship with us. So the basic rule that I think we named this in the last episode is that if you wouldn't say it to an adult, don't say it to a child, right? There's so many things that we would never say to an adult because it wouldn't be respectful, but keep saying it to our children anyway. So here's some examples of that. When your child is angry or upset.
You're just tired.
When you're cold, but your child is not.
Put on more clothes.
When your child is scared or shy.
No, you don't feel like that. You shouldn't feel like that.
When your child is crying.
Oh, don't be a crybaby.
And when they fall down and cry.
Come on, up again. It didn't really hurt.
And the last one is the when you're eating and they're full.
Oh, just have two more bites. Finish. Finish your plate, then you can get down. No dessert if you don't ease it all up. Wouldn't it be great if that's how we talk to our partners and our friends?
Yeah. I'm going to write down these lines on Instagram and people can try them at home with their partners.
I love it. Especially the finish your plate one.
Yeah. The parent-child relationship is a subject-subject relationship, not a subject-object relationship. Because two subjects are two people, an object is a thing, right? So when we're with our children, we're two human beings in relationship together. So we're not one human being doing something with an object, with a thing. We all know this, but we don't really take it to heart. And many parents unconsciously make their children objects. I have lots of people in therapy, in family therapy, where they realize, like, they don't get, why is my children reacting this way? Why do they slam their doors? Why are they not? Lots of things, that a lot of reactions from the kids. And then they realize, I'm making my child a project. Mm-hmm. So when we do this, we want to do stuff with our kids. We want to make them a certain way or make them do certain things. And it's meant as a really loving thing. It's a protective thing, but it doesn't feel loving to be somebody's project, to be a thing instead of being a human being. And examples of that can be, just like we talked about before, being really focused on wanting your kids to go to school instead of actually hearing them and seeing them. There's something going on inside my child. There's a reason why they don't want to go to school, right? How is my child feeling? And not just being focused on getting them to school. Or wanting your child to play sports because you were chubby as a kid and you don't want the same for your child. Or sports really saved you as a kid and felt amazing. So of course it's going to be amazing for your child too.
Yeah. And there's a subtle difference in that, right? Because of course it's fine to encourage your children to expose themselves to sport, but it's, where's it coming from?
Yeah.
Is it something you need them to do? Or are you genuinely okay with them having a taste of sport and going, no, it's not for me? Can they say no?
Yeah. Seeing your child, right?
Yeah. I've got an example here around, this was not that long ago, and we were trying to help Rumi, like get nappies, and we made a mistake. And one of the things we said, I'll give a tiny bit of story. She went an entire day without peeing. We didn't have a nap. She went an entire day without peeing. And we were like, this isn't good. And we were asking her, why don't you go to the toilet, babe? And in her own little 2-3-year-old way, she said, I won't say which of us it was, but she said, one of mum or dad said that big girls don't wear nappies. And we realized it's something we'd been saying.
Yeah.
Big girls don't wear nappies. Even though we said it with a smile and this kind of loving face and trying to be motivational, she learned that wearing nappies was not going to get, you know, that was our project to get her out of nappies because that was beneficial for us. And therefore, that part of her that needed nappies wasn't particularly lovable by us. And therefore, her little brain figured out that if she stopped herself needing to pee, or she just didn't pee, she'd be okay because she isn't quite ready to use a toilet.
Yeah.
So her own solution was not to pee, making her a project, shaming her for wearing nappies. All from this place of thinking we're trying to help her. Yeah.
So she tries to fit herself into that box, right? Big girls don't wear nappies. Big boys don't cry. Children are best seen, not heard.
Yeah.
There's so many of those boxes that just, we just say it.
We just say it. And we do it with a big smile.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing the example. Yeah, like we said on the last episode, it's about meeting our children where they are, not where we want them to go, and not making them a project. And as the example now, it's so easy. We want to help our children. We want them to start using the toilet. We want them to eat healthy. We want all these good things for them. And we can very easily say it in a way where they don't feel welcome as they are.
Yeah, and I think the headlines of this point so far was like being equal in worth, not in power and experience. And I think the hard thing here is often there's often something in society that says if we sort of give in or pander to your child, especially a little child, you're somehow weak. You're somehow sort of spoiling them, right? And this is because actually to do this well, to acknowledge that we're equal in worth, sometimes we have to go with what our child wants, even if it's inconvenient for us. We have to actually sit with what they're asking for from us. And there can be people in our lives who want to say that that's spoiling them.
Yeah.
And actually, we have to be able to stand up to that. And that can be really hard. Yeah. So this stuff sounds good, but actually in practice, it can be really difficult.
Yeah. And this leads us to the next one, because that's about boundaries. And because many of us who grew up in the old paradigm, we weren't allowed to feel boundaries. So if I don't know my boundaries, I don't know who I am, then it's really hard to feel safe to give my children their power, right?
Yeah.
Because I can't really feel myself here. So that feels pretty dangerous. But the next part is about boundaries. And it's about setting up boundaries around ourselves, not around our children. Mm-hmm. So my boundary is the meeting point between me and the world. It keeps something out. It keeps something in. And it's also the place where we can meet. It's a place where we can feel each other. And boundaries are felt in many different ways. It's both physical, it's our skin, it's our eyes, closing our eyes. It's having space, taking up space. It's our values and our values being overstepped. It's about being allowed or not being allowed to be me, not being seen, feeling erased. Mm. So having our boundaries overstepped is very invasive. It's a threat to our survival. And not feeling and not setting our boundaries also washes us out and makes us unclear, which of course does not feel safe to our children. So where do you end and where do I begin? Where is the boundary between me and the world? Who am I and who are you in this moment? What do I accept and when do I have a no? So being allowed to feel myself and have my boundaries. This is something most of us struggle with a lot.
Yes. And we talk about finding our voice, right? It's very hard to find your voice without boundaries.
Yeah.
Impossible.
Yeah.
What's my voice? What's someone else's voice? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So in this way, personal boundaries is something that protects the individual. It helps us feel safe. It helps us feel differentiated in the world and with other people. And other people's boundaries, and especially boundaries of our parents in childhood, is what helps us feel safe. It's something that we can feel ourselves against, and it's something that we can lean into. So who you are helps me feel who I can be in the relationship. Who are you and who can I be with you right now? Mm. So feeling our boundaries can be a lot more difficult in practice for those of us who have grown up in the old paradigm. Because we have been told who to be, we have been scolded and ridiculed for being angry, which is all about boundaries. Or we have been met with rage or not met or regulated in our emotions.
Or maybe we grew up in a kind of family culture that was so strong, it wasn't safe to be anything other than that.
Mm.
Our family culture is we're tough and we fight. We fight when there's a challenge. We're not able to sit with pain or talk or actually acknowledge our emotions.
Yeah, so in different ways, we learn to shut down and to not feel or not show what we feel. And a huge part of feeling our boundaries is feeling our anger. And even if you get angry real easily, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have a healthy contact with your anger. Because many of us have learned to do our anger, not be our anger, not be with our anger. Mm-hmm. The doing our anger means either pushing it down, or it means acting it out, raging it out. And when we do this, we're not keeping our boundaries. We are either like sucking them into our bones, into our bodies, or we're like forcing them and pouring them out into other people, which is unregulated, which is not balanced and not really felt from the inside. Being with our anger means noticing it. It means feeling it, listening to it in our bodies. Because this is what anger needs. I both remember Peter Levine talking about this and Gabor Maté, these really big names in therapy and somatic therapy. And Gabor Maté would say that your anger is actually really calm, really clear.
Yeah.
Rage is not really anger. It's actually anxiety. Anxiety about being angry at people we love, which feels dangerous in childhood. But anger is clear and calm when we listen to it. It's a boundary. It's informing us of our no, of our boundaries, of who we can be in the present. And sometimes our anger is not congruent with the present at all. And then it's informing us of something from the past that gets triggered in the present and something that needs our attention. Sometimes it needs some therapy. Mm-hmm. And just being able to start noticing the difference is really important. So we don't pass on the pain from the past onto our children. And other times, so we can actually feel right now, I do have a no that actually makes sense right now for my children, which is safe for them.
Yes. And I think there's something here about one way of testing a bit is asking ourselves, is my response, my angry response, is it sort of proportionate to the moment? You know, if our partner says, can you put out the rubbish? And we respond from a, no, I won't put out the rubbish. You know? Then that's maybe it's not congruent with the present moment, what we're being asked of us. And it's maybe suggesting that it's triggering something from the past. If it's something that is calm and in that case might be more, as you said, calm and clear, no, I can't do that for these reasons, then we might think of anger as our advocate. It's actually speaking up for where our boundaries are being crossed. But sort of testing how proportionate is my response to what's going on. And then we can actually start to look more at ourselves rather than the other person.
Yeah. So how do I set my boundaries while respecting the boundaries of my children? So I'm not wanting to repeat the patterns of overstepping, of shutting down boundaries in our own children, we can easily end up not setting our boundaries at all. Especially if we have a hard time even feeling our boundaries. And we will often end up, this happens a lot, especially with Danish parents who are trying to do the new paradigm of parenting, the new child view or new Danish parenting. They end up kind of pendulating between no boundaries and very rigid boundaries, or ending up scolding and doing, saying exactly what their parents said that they swore they would never say, when it doesn't work to not have boundaries because they want to give their children so much space. So they're not feeling themselves in it. And they end up feeling powerless, which becomes the abuse of power that they know from their own childhood. And this is, of course, not helpful. It doesn't feel safe for children. It's actually very confusing to them. So really starting to feel into our own boundaries, to feel into ourselves, is such an important part of the new paradigm of parenting. We have to find a way back to ourselves. So there's like a golden rule of new Danish parenting and the new child view. And I have this from my teacher. Her name is Fie Herby. I don't know if she made it up or if it comes from Jesper Juhl or somebody before that. She can have the credit for now.
We should put this in big flashing lights because this is a really big one.
Set your boundaries around yourself, not around your children. I'm going to put this on Instagram too, because it really needs a drawing.
Yeah.
I didn't make a drawing here on the podcast, but it's about, this is me, this is my boundary. It's not who you are. It's not about shaming or defining you. So very simply, and people probably heard this before, it's about saying I instead of saying you. So say, I want you to put your shoes on. Not.
Can you please put your shoes on?
I want you to go to bed now.
Not. Can you go to bed this very minute?
And the next one is, I want you to stop hitting your brother, or I don't want you to hit your brother. Not.
What is wrong with you? Stop hitting your brother.
And the last one is, I want you to turn off the computer. Not.
You are so spoiled. Turn off the damn computer.
So as you might notice, when we say you, it seems like we're asking a question, sometimes at least, even though there's not really an option to say no. And we very easily end up defining our children. And that means we're setting the boundaries around them. When we say I instead of you, we're talking about ourselves. I'm saying, who am I right now? What do I want and what do I not want? I'm setting the boundaries around myself, not around my child, which helps them feel safe. It helps them feel me, helps them feel the parent. And when we set our boundaries around our children, we're not telling them who we are right now. They have to guess. Instead, we're telling our children who they are and who they can and cannot be. And when, as parents, when we tell our children who they are, they trust us more than they trust what they feel inside. And this makes them, of course, not feel good about themselves, makes them not feel themselves, not feel their boundaries. And it makes them not feel lovable and not good enough as they are. It's making them potentially at least exile parts of themselves that are not accepted and not welcomed. And it induces a shame response to protect them. So the way we see and define or treat our children becomes the way that they see and define and treat themselves. And an important point here is that your child is not looking for a boundary. They're not looking for you to put a boundary around them. They're looking for you. They're looking to feel safe. And people will often say from the kind of the old parenting perspective that children are acting out or misbehaving or something like that because they're looking for boundaries. And where they mean they want you to shut them down and scold them and tell them who they can be. And this is like an old paradigm misunderstanding of what feels safe for children. Our children are not looking for boundaries in this old paradigm sense of shutting down and defining. They're looking for your boundaries. They're looking for you. Who is my mom? Who is my dad right now? Who can I be with them? Which makes us feel safe. safe. It means we have something to lean into, which is just like babies lying on your chest, feeling your heartbeat, which regulates their heartbeat. And this is the same when children can feel us, when they know us, then they can lean into that, then they can feel that safe attachment. The more self-led we can be, which is led from the inside, and the more secure we can be in our parenting, the safer our children will feel to be themselves and to become themselves and to slowly build that inner secure attachment that their attachment to their parents is meant to create. And we talked about this before, that co-regulation leads to self-regulation. Outer secure attachment leads to inner secure attachment. This is what attachment relationship is all about.
So we had two key principles so far. The first one was equal in worth, not in power and experience. The second one, set boundaries around yourself, not around your child. And now we move to the third.
Yeah. This one is about children don't stop loving us. They stop loving themselves. In IFS terms, we could say that our children cannot afford to exile their parents. So they exile parts of themselves to be in the relationship, right? To be lovable. So simply put, we can say that shame and separation is the opposite of love and connection. So shame stands in when love is not felt. It protects when there's an absence of love. So shaming our children or not helping them out of natural shame states separates them from us. And the only way that they can stay in a semi-relationship, which means surviving and feeling somewhat safe, is to keep loving their parents, to keep the connection. And this means they need to stop loving the parts of themselves that we deem unlovable, that we cannot be with. If we cannot love them in their anger, then they need to shut off their anger, for instance, and exile parts of them that hold anger. So in this way, inner separation and exiling parts is what happens in order to stay safe. So to keep the outer connection, we lose inner connection to our parts, to our core, to our foundation, to our truth, to ourselves. In the absence of love, shame is going to protect. Shame is going to create distance. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think this is pretty devastating, really, to stay with. To keep loving us, our children have to shut off parts of themselves. And it helps to speak to what's happened to us as we notice the bits of ourselves that we don't love, where that came from. It makes me think of that little example of my daughter and the nappies. You know, it's like my parents don't value the part of me that wants nappies, so I'm going to get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's so important to know as parents, one thing is to not blame ourselves, because there's always a reason why we react the way we do. And also that we can always clean up backwards. It's never too late to apologize, to take responsibility, to talk about these things, because that can create space for the parts inside of our children that they have exiled or that they might exile.
Yeah. That's it. You said the key thing, like apologize and take responsibility. It can be, you know, if I think of that situation, you know, daughter hasn't peed for a day, it'd be really hard to shame her about that. When she says it was because of, you guys said big girls don't use nappies, then what do you mean? You know, why did you take it like that? We can repair if we apologize and take responsibility. Yeah.
And we all make mistakes. It's not, we don't want to be perfect. We're not good role models if we're perfect. We're good role models if we repair.
Yeah.
So as children, our parents are our survival in the world. So not to love them is much more dangerous than not to love ourselves. If my mom treats me badly,
then I am bad.
If my dad doesn't show love in a way that I can feel it,
then I am unlovable.
If my mom doesn't see me,
then I am not worthy.
And if my dad is always too busy,
then I am not important.
Co-regulation leads to self-regulation. Co-separation leads to self-separation. We cut off the parts of ourselves that are not welcome. Brené Brown, she said, the opposite of belonging is fitting in.
Yeah. And there's going to be some uncomfortable stuff in here, I reckon, because I suspect everyone can identify with something here that in their own life or they see in their child. So Joey, just a reminder of what you said about being kind to ourselves and not needing to be perfect.
Yeah, and really see how this fits into your own childhood too.
Yeah.
Places of yourself that you cannot love. So it's a reason for it, and it doesn't mean that you're unlovable.
Yeah.
It means you weren't seen the way you were supposed to be seen, the way you deserved to be seen.
And that our parents probably had the same experience. They probably weren't seen in the way they needed to be seen.
Yeah, and we can heal it now. Yeah. And we can heal it forward.
Yeah.
So these are some of the core burden beliefs that exiles carry. I'm unlovable, I'm not good enough, I'm bad, I'm unworthy. And we carry this deep inside of us. And in many ways, it becomes what we navigate from as adults in unconscious ways of trying to keep these beliefs that are so painful We want to keep them under the surface. We don't want to feel it. So for instance, if I am bad, then I might need to fawn. I might need to overstep my boundaries all the time in order to be good. If I am unlovable, I might need to build a very solid career, even though it doesn't make me happy, even though it's not what I really want. If I'm unworthy, then I can never respect myself enough to leave my abusive partner. And if I'm not important, then I'm never going to get up in front of other people and really show who I am, even if I really want to.
Yeah, and as you said, all this can be, we can repair these states with our child, but also we can repair in ourselves as adults.
Yeah.
And that might be in therapy, or it might be in relationship with our partner, or yeah, it's all possible.
Yeah. Relationships matter most. That's what this episode is about, right? So when we talk about love and shame here, it's important to know that shame in itself is not the problem. Shame is a solution in a way. It has a protective function, but not shaming. Shaming other people is very hurtful. If we don't feel shame at all, and if we're not regulated out of shame, our nervous system will not have the flexibility it needs in the world of relationships.
Mm.
So just like when we play with our children, sometimes we play wildly with them, the nervous system will be more flexible in arousal and back to regulation, right? So in the yes and no of relationships and of parenting, our children learn that our boundaries and their boundaries can open up and they can close without being totally dysregulated or without totally shutting down. So it doesn't have to be rigid, totally open, totally shut. Boundaries, being ourselves with other people. And when we're not learning this, then conflicts and being different, especially in romantic relationships, can feel really, really scary because we have not been regulated out of shame states that naturally occur. So therefore, our nervous system doesn't know how to do it. And we keep going out of our window of tolerance, right? It's going to be either arousal, sympathetic arousal, or shutdown. And we don't know how to get out of it. Again, it's not about shaming, but it's about being able to be in shame and being helped out of that. So when we say no to our children, they experience what we can call a small natural shame. It's a small shutdown. And when we set a boundary, they're going to feel a small separation or a small shame. Even when we're saying I, even when we're talking about ourselves, there's still going to be a tiny shame, a tiny shutdown. In sensitive children, this can be stronger. They're going to be more sensitive to feeling that. And if we scold and if we define, if we shame, if we shut down, it's going to be even stronger. So one thing is setting the boundaries around ourselves and in a way that's attuned to our children. And the other thing is helping our children out of states of natural shame when they get a no. So this is the yes, no, yes of shame regulation. So when our children are babies, we say yes to them all the time. We light up, we invite, when they look at us, when they smile, when they roll over, all these things, we say yes. We're so excited for them. And this opens up their boundaries. It opens up connection and love to us, to the world. We're connecting with them and they're connecting. Like a big yes in all these different ways, right? And then when they start crawling, when they start walking, start being able to move around more, do more things, get curious about the world, we start saying no. Because suddenly there's a lot of dangers. There's a lot of ways they can hurt themselves, right? Both physically and in relationships, all these different ways. And then no, it's really good. It's really necessary, but it's also a small shutdown. It's also a small shame. So here it's really important to know that children, small children cannot regulate themselves out of shame. And even adults who have not learned this cannot regulate themselves out of shame. They need co-regulation. Children need co-regulation. And then the nervous system can slowly learn to do that themselves. So the yes, no, yes of shame regulation means adding a yes after the no, after the shutdown, to get them back into that open, connected state so they're not left alone in it. You with me so far?
Yeah, like it's making me think about adult relationships, and you said how many of us haven't learned it. Mm. Yeah, how many of us get a no from our partner and we separate?
One of the really difficult things in relationships is when we have not been regulated out of shame as children, then being different, not agreeing is really, really scary. Being in a conflict is so scary because then we're going to be wrong. Then we're going to be in shame and we don't know how to get out of that. So when children do things we don't like, we might think that we need to not comfort them after saying no, or that our partners cannot comfort them after we said no to them or if we scolded them or something. But it's really important to know that saying yes after saying no is not saying yes to the behavior. It's saying yes to the child, yes to who they are, yes to connecting. Mm-hmm. So comforting and being with our children when they feel shame, when they get upset, when they shut down, means saying yes to our children. And this helps them feel lovable, feel loved, even if the behavior is unwanted. But like we said on the first episode about New Danish Parenting, it's about meeting our children where they are. That's the primary thing, being with them as they are. Saying yes to our children regulates them out of shame and out of shutdown. It helps their nervous system become stronger, become more flexible, instead of being very rigid and with these neural pathways that lead them like on a highway to shutdown. Shame and shutdown, on the inside, on the outside, happens when there's a no or when there's a shock to our system. And it happens when we cannot be with our children as they are, when they have strong emotions, because they need us to help regulate them, to feel love and to feel safe in order to be themselves, to not shut off to themselves. So here's an example of like a child, maybe 2-year-old or something. I don't even know anymore because my kids are so big. Imagine your small child sitting under your desk and pulling out all the cables of all your electronic devices. They're having lots of fun and they're in this open yes state, right? And then you see it and you're shocked and you're exclaiming, no, stop that. And the child freezes up. They're startled by your sudden no. They might start crying or just sit there kind of frozen. And then you're sitting down on the floor next to your child, taking the cables out of their hands and maybe putting the child up on your lap if they want to. And just holding the child that's maybe crying, maybe just startled because they're in that shame state to some degree. And this might be enough. Just being with them, just sitting with them might be enough to regulate them out of this shame. Or it could be saying a few words like, you were having lots of fun pulling out the cables. Then I yelled, no, you got scared, huh? I see that. And I'm right here. And just hugging the child. This is the yes, no, yes. Adding the yes at the end. So they feel the love, they feel the connection, and the shame can melt. It doesn't have to create the separation.
Yeah. So there's the yes, that open state from the child, the no from us when the behavior crosses a line. And then the yes in being with them in how they've responded to the no in that separation. I can think of a couple of painful ones like this recently with my daughter. As you say, it's just about being there. And then in how we hold them, it's not reasserting our power. I shouted because you didn't do what I told you. It's not that.
Yeah, it's just about being with them.
So that last principle we were talking about was number 3. Children don't stop loving us. They stop loving themselves. So there's 3 key things again. We are equal in worth with our children, not in power and experience. Set boundaries around yourself, not around a child. Children don't stop loving us. They stop loving themselves. And ultimately, relationships matter most. The second principle of New Danish Parenting.
And in the next one, we're going to talk about the parent.
The third principle. It's all about parents.
And it's so important, especially when we talk about shame, that we as parents, we feel so much shame too in different ways.
Yeah.
From our parenting and from being children. And it's not about blame. It's not about being wrong. It's about learning new things so we can do new things, right?
Yeah.
We're always doing the best we can.
Is it time?
I think so.
Anything we need to say? We're going to put something on Instagram.
Yeah. Check out Instagram. It's I think it's just called Parenting from the Inside.
Yeah, and feel free to send us a message on this.
Yeah, anything that comes up, anything you agree with, don't agree with, you're curious about, anything you want to know more about. And like we said in the beginning, we're not experts on you and what's right for you. And people listening to this come from many different countries, many different cultures too, right? And it doesn't always apply what we're saying, or maybe it applies in a different way than how we're wording it.
Yeah.
So take what you can use in the way that makes sense for you. That's what matters.
We'll see you next time.
Yeah, thank you for listening.